It's the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with hosts Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. Your announcer, Zach Caton, and we're coming to you live on tape from Cassatt in the heart of 15th and 15th. Cassatt, a wine and craft cocktail bar at 1508 South, 1500 East in the Great Salt Lake City. Our guest today is Emily Park, the program manager at Spice Kitchen Incubator.
That's good.
Well, it is and it isn't. We've got different problems. So right now we've got a...
Let me tell you.
Yeah, please.
And now here are your hosts, Jimmy and Bill.
And here we go. Perhaps we ought to begin this podcast with a toast. Our guest is here, Emily Park, who's the program manager at Spice Kitchen Incubator. And you toasted for me. Thank you. And we will be chatting with Emily, but first let's have a sip of... What kind of wine is this, Jim?
This is a Zinfandel by Carol Shelton out of Mendocino, California, called Wild Thing. Available here in the local market. And what a great afternoon to have a little red accompanied with rosemary truffle popcorn by Pop Art. And I didn't realize they're a local company.
They sure are. They're a fantastic local company with amazing flavors. And it goes really well with this red.
Get very close to the microphone, if you would, please.
Absolutely.
Nailed it.
And we should... I want to ask you a question about buying wine. We'll talk to Emily in just a second.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question about buying wine.
Sure.
Because the Zinfandel reminded me of...
Hold, please.
We got a bottle of Sangiovese.
Yeah, very nice.
From the liquor store, and it was vinegary.
Mm.
And my wife said, this is like the third time this particular label has been vinegary. Now you can take it back to the wine store.
And yeah, they will... there's a fault to the wine, whether it's corked, if it smells like wet newspaper or something like mm-hmm. that, or cardboard box. That's something called cork taint. But in the case of vinegar or almost like a hairspray, kind of a high acidic, that's due to a couple of reasons. But one, primarily the method of storing. It was hot, then it was cold, then it was hot. And it was cold. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that happens in shipping containers, especially if you're finding a number of them in a row. Sangiovese, though, I believe, the Zin, fantastic producer.
It's not been every time.
No, but sure, but, when it happens, bring it back to the wine store and make mention.
You know, one other quick thing about that. I didn't realize this was true, but I my wife said you could do it, and so I found out I could. I dropped a bottle of whiskey once in the driveway when I got home, you know, and it broke. It had not been opened. And my wife said, you know, the liquor store will take that back. And I said, what? She said, no. And I said, oh, I'm going to call. So I called them and they said, if the seal has not been broken, if you dropped it even at home in the driveway, we'll replace it.
Huh. So I'm going to get a glass cutter and go drain it
Macy, who's filling in as a producer here, remind me, just take a note if you would please. My band name is going to be Cork Taint. Okay. That'll be my band. When I form a band, we're going to call it Cork Taint.
Okay. Can I be part of the band?
Thank you. And now let's get to our guest. You see, we're rather casual here. Emily Park, who is the program manager and Spice Kitchen Incubator at Spice Kitchen Incubator. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely, it's a pleasure.
I don't know where to start with you because as we were talking before we got on the microphones, we were talking a little bit about your history, which is quite interesting. Let's start with Spice Kitchen Incubator.
You got it.
Just tell people what that is.
Yeah, so Spice Kitchen Incubator, we are a program of the International Rescue Committee here in Salt Lake City. We're a joint venture between the IRC as well as Salt Lake County. Started 10 years ago, so it's our anniversary. But what we do is we help anybody who is looking to start a culinary business. So you can be foreign born, you can be native born. What you need to be is at a financial disadvantage. So we're helping people who are low to moderate income learn everything that they need to know, from business plans, how to file your taxes, what permits you need, how do you get a commissary kitchen. We subsidize your rent.
What does that mean, a commissary kitchen? What is that?
Commissary kitchen, it's basically where everyone works out of one single kitchen. So you can have multiple businesses. The one that we're in has about 50 or so, and you all share the collective resources.
You have to rotate and schedule and...
Yep, it's
not everybody's cooking at once.
No. I mean, it's a lot of scheduling gymnastics, and there's definitely peak times. So they charge more during those.
I've had roommates, and they've always taken things in my fridge, in the fridge labeled mine. Right? I can only imagine the labeling system.
Oh, you've got to label everything that's on a shelf, the shelf itself.
Who took my sour
everything.
Cream?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Let's talk
different languages.
We'll talk more about that and how people can enjoy the fruits of that. Mm-hmm. But let's go to your history a little bit. Emily Park, you went to culinary school in New York.
I did.
Yeah.
So I went to a school that sadly no longer exists. It was the French Culinary Institute. So this is somewhere that locally, Romina Rasmussen went there, Letty Flat went there, but you've also got some bigger names like Bobby Flay, David Chang, Christina Tosi, who was actually my boss for a period of time. So there's a lot of people that came out of that school, and it was a really intensive program, but so much fun.
Yeah? How a couple of years? Where are you doing?
No, we actually go really fast. So anybody who's enrolling in that school, it was more, you know how to be an adult, you're just doing job retraining, so it was 6 months of intensive classwork. But it was like 1,000 hours of practicum, and then you were able to get connected to local restaurants that you were working at. So I was working for Momofuku Milk Bar. I ended up working at Double Crown. Did a lot of cool stuff while I was out there.
And,
cool.
And you wanted to have your own place at one time
and
be a chef?
I was a chef for a while, did have my own restaurant for a minute, kind of bounced around the country, was working, kind of worked my way backwards, which is more the way it is in the industry. So you start in a 5-star and then you kind of work your way down to like a grease spoon diner, just because you get so burned out from like all of the
pressure,
the tweezers, the pressure. Yeah.
Where's my edible flowers?
Exactly. The gold leaf, all of it. So, yeah. So you just kind of work your way down. Locally, was pastry chef over at Cafe Niche. I ran the bread program up at Deer Valley for a minute, helped open East Liberty Tap House, worked the hot side there. I ran my own business, made caramels, marshmallows, chocolates, that kind of thing, farmers markets, wholesale, was in Harmon's for a minute, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot of it. And now you're with Spice Kitchen Incubator, and Spice Kitchen Incubator is, it's kind of morphed over the it's 10 years of existence. Mm-hmm. It's kind of changed. And so talk about the beginnings and how it's changed.
Yeah, so it started and it was much more of a cookie cutter kind of program. So you kind of came in, we taught you the basics. It was more people started as a catering business and then they were working to a brick and mortar restaurant. So obviously, one size does not fit all. People get different ideas. You get more creative. You want to try different things. I know that's the path that I kind of went in through. But it's kind of evolved over time. So instead of we're showing you how to do it, you kind of tell us more, what do you want to learn? And then it's our job to make sure we're connecting you to the resources, giving you the information that you need to make the decisions that you need to for your business.
I always thought it was specifically, immigrant families who wanted to start restaurants, but not exclusively that.
No, we're a little bit of a different thing. The vast majority of who we work with, about 86% of the entrepreneurs we work with, are refugees, immigrants, asylees. Collectively, we refer to them as new Americans, but that does not bar you from being part of the program. We help everybody. It's just those people who are at that financial disadvantage.
Mm. And it used to be that you would, I'd get an email and say, here's what's on offer this week. Mm-hmm. And it would be somebody from Somalia, and here are the dishes that they're going to be preparing. Mm-hmm. And I would put in my order. Yeah. And then a couple of days later, I would go to the location and pick up dinner.
Yeah.
Pick up what I had ordered.
Yeah.
Not that way anymore.
No. Spice to go was great for a period of time, especially during the pandemic. But I mean, if you're like me, it's kind of hard to wait a couple of days to eat, and I kind of want instant gratification. I want to eat it right now. Mm-hmm. So we kind of shifted away from that, and we've been working on something for the last year and a half, just opened it, and it's the Spice on 9th Cafe. So we took over the old Mods Cafe space as part of Art Space Greenery. So we are 422 West, 900 South. But this is so you're able to directly interact with those entrepreneurs. Mm. So you don't have to wait. So Monday through Friday, 8 to 3, we're open regular hours. So you're able to come in. The entrepreneurs themselves are running the cafe. You can get their hot menu. You can get hot coffee. We also have a marketplace, so you can pick up packaged products because not everyone wants to do hot food. Some people want to have grocery store items. Mm-hmm. Some people want to expand their line and have frozen food. We've got that. We've got bottled drinks, we have hot sauces, we've got desserts. Eventually we're going to get baked items in there, so have more of a wide variety. And then we've also got fresh produce from New Roots Farmers. They're a sister program of ours, of the IRC.
And what is New Roots Farmers?
Yeah, so the New Roots, they are a program that specifically works with people who are refugee and immigrant backgrounds, but they want to start their own urban farming business. So you're seeing a lot of more traditional produce, but you're also seeing things that they would have grown in their home countries that are a little bit more unique. Mm-hmm. So we've got that available, and then we also have artisan makers, business services, importers that are also part of our small business program. So this could be anything from jewelry, clothing. We've got people who are doing transportation services, people who have home-based childcare. So we really want it to be a connector for the community. And then we've got resources available for small business owners like computers, business books, providing workshops, training, and technical assistance at the cafe too.
So now if I come into Spice on 9th, at 10 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. Am I going to find a whole variety of different cuisines available to me, or just like one day and one the next day?
Yeah. So right now we're obviously, it's a new thing, new for us, new for them. So we're trying out different models. Right now we're turning over the cafe to one entrepreneur at a time during the week. So
that would seem to make sense.
Yeah. That way it's a little more consistent. They're able to have their following kind of come find them. You can come back and try a couple of different things.
Did
off
you
their
say
menu.
For one day?
For one week.
For 1 week. Okay.
Yeah. So last week we had Halab's Jasmine Kitchen. So that is Syrian food. So you were able to get things like chicken biryani, and you had falafel. This week we have Shui Let Yar Sushi. So she has a mixture of sushi as well as Burmese dishes. Next week we've got Water Wheel Kitchen. So there's Jordanian Egyptian influences there.
Man.
And then after that, you've got Sikkim Momo. So that is more, Sikkim is a small kingdom north of India. You can see Mount Everest from these
yep.
ladies' hometown. But it's more kind of Nepalese Indian food.
Mm-hmm. Now, please tell me, I have been dying to have Indonesian food. Do you have any Indonesian food?
At the moment, we don't.
Oh, damn it. Damn it. I want a Reisstaffel. Reisstaffel? Yeah. The rice table. I love that.
God. No, it's good stuff. But yeah, no, it's we kind of see cuisines come through in waves. So definitely always looking to help people from any kind of backgrounds. But we've got 26 different culinary traditions that we're representing right now.
I have a list here of the, you mentioned some of them, but the couple that just jump out at me, let me ask you about them.
Mm-hmm.
What is prime corn?
Oh, Wendy's food. Oh. So prime corn, she is a woman who, Wendy Juarez, she started this to really share the cultural traditions of her food with her daughter, who is interested in more vegetarian and vegan options. So what she does is she's originally from Mexico, but she does pre-Hispanic ingredients. So this is prior to settlement by the Spanish conquistadors.
Mm.
So you're seeing a lot of those original native ingredients. She has recently added meat to her menu, but it's all locally sourced, ethically raised, the whole nine yards, really in line with her brand. She has so many amazing flavors and has a really exciting new venture coming out that I'm not allowed to talk about yet.
Okay. It's popsicles, isn't it? It's pre-Hispanic popsicles. And then there was one other one that jumped out at me that I thought was, what is Mama Africa and Mama Beignet? Tell me about that.
Oh my gosh. So Kati has been around for a while. You'll definitely know her personality. The second you meet her, you are a friend. So Kati was in our first cohort as Mama Africa. So she did hot food. She had a restaurant. She had a food truck. She still has her hot sauces that she does. But she came back into the program to start a new venture, Mama Beignet. So with that one, she wants to do her beignets, definitely more dessert, looking at kind of doing some packaging with it, but eventually wants to franchise that. Mm-hmm. So she has big plans to match her big personality.
I think that's interesting that these people have these plans and you try to incubate the plans.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the organization is. This is fascinating. And then one other quick one, for people who are a little afraid of all of that stuff, what's Fresh and Fried?
Oh my gosh. So Fresh and Fried, that is actually the second business from Halab's Jasmine Kitchen. So he has his Syrian menu that is a little bit more traditional, but Fresh and Fried, he started a new food truck last year where he has an air fryer. And then he's doing, so it's a little fresher, but it's a better fried version for you. So healthy fried food. But it's a little bit more accessible. So he'll do things like fried chicken. He'll have French fries. So it's more for like the late night bar crowd. But if you're out and about, you'll typically see a blend of his two menus on the truck.
Now this all sounds, you know, delicious. And if people want to come to the Spice on 9th, but they want to know what they're going to get ahead of time, how do they find out about it?
So we post our menus on our Instagram and Facebook. So that is just at Spice Kitchen Incubator. It's also on our website, spicekitcheninincubator.org. We've got more information about all of the chefs, kind of their story, more information about the program, how you can get involved, how you can apply to be a participant in the program. But we do have a section about the cafe where we're posting the menus so you can know what you're getting for the week.
There was one that I got when I was going to Spice Kitchen Incubator, and I never saw it again, and I don't, and I think the guy, it was South African, was it, or it could have been New Zealand, but they prepared little boxes of food. This is not ringing a bell.
Are we talking more like a bento box, or are we talking?
It's too vague.
During COVID, though, that when you were picking it up. Yeah.
It was really good. This is a great deal here. And now, here on my notes, it says Discover Food Festival, October 7th.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly when this is going to be dropped, but we'll try and drop it before October 7th. But talk about the food festival.
Yeah. So Discover Food Festival is our annual food festival. So this is where you, as members of the community, can come and eat. We try to have everybody do smaller bite-sized samples so you can kind of be like what my parents did last year, where they ate at every single food booth and then couldn't move for a couple of days. But you're able to try these different cuisines, really engage with them, learn more what they're about. You can try things that they have very similar. So there's a lot of cultures that have variations of samosas. Like in in Latin America, it's more like an empanada. Like you'll see it more as a dumpling in Asia.
So everybody has a taco, for instance.
Exactly. So you can try the tacos from every single different country and enjoy that. But we also try to make sure it's an educational experience. So we have cooking demonstrations. This year, we want to make sure that we're adding entertainment that's happening live that's culturally adjacent to the entrepreneurs that are there. And then, of course, what would a food festival be without alcohol? So there is a bar as well.
And where is this happening?
So this year, we're actually closing down the street in between the City and County Building and Library Square. So kind of in between 450 and 500 South on 200 East. And we're going to have that open to the public. It's free to attend. You can learn more about the program. You can donate if you'd like to, learn how to get involved. But really what we want you to do is buy from the entrepreneurs.
And that's October 7th.
October 7th from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Is that a Saturday?
That is a Saturday.
And people, if people want to find out more about that and everything we've been talking about, they go where?
SpiceKitchenIncubator.org.
Okay. All right. Jimmy.
Oh.
Jimmy Santangelo, my fine co-host here, who brought the Wild Thing wine. We've never had...
keeps me around. Yes. I'm the booze guy.
We've never had a bad bottle of that.
No.
My wife will say, get the Segazio or get the Wild Thing, whichever one. I got the Segazio last time. What news have you for us?
So we like to do a little splash of news each week with the podcast, and I've got 2 points of interest here today. One thing that's really interesting, okay, here we go. According to the Drink Business magazine, older adults are drinking more in the U.S., research finds. So, Bill, thank you for that. Thank you for bumping up the entire U.S.
Are you referring to me as an older adult?
that drinks more? We're doing
Macy,
our part.
Where are my depends? Jesus Christ, Jimmy.
A recent Gallup poll finds that, quote, the percentages of 18 to 34-year-olds who report that they drink at all, drank in the past week, or sometimes drink more than they should, are lower today than they were 20 years ago. Among adults under the age of 35, 62% report that they drink alcohol, down from 72%. So they're drinking less. Mm-hmm. Kids are drinking less.
Okay.
But this is the where it's being made up. Whereas drinking has increased amongst adults age 55 and older from 49 to 59% in the same 20-year period.
We can do better than that.
Yeah, I do. Just got to focus, remain focused.
Yeah. I need to concentrate on my drinking.
So this is a buddy of mine that I've worked with for years. This is Utah News and local news that made national headlines. There's a campaign to loosen Utah liquor laws. A former wine distributor, Jeff Carter, wants to change Utah's strict alcohol laws and filed an official citizen initiative to amend the state's Alcohol Beverage Control Act that he hopes to get on the ballot next year. Carter's petition asks for major changes in the Utah system. He wants the state to do away with most state-owned liquor stores, allow private liquor stores, allow grocery stores to sell wine and spirits, and allow customers to have wine shipped to them. The path ahead, though, for Carter is daunting. First, he must host 7 public hearings around the state. After that, he has only 30 days to collect 134,000 signatures in a state of only 3.2 million people. That's about 4% of the entire state population that he has to collect signatures
from. Yeah, good luck. Mm-hmm.
But if he can do that all by February 15th, he can get the petition on the 2024 ballot. Good luck, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your splash of news.
Well, there you go. Now, one other thing that we like to do, Emily, is Emily Park is the program manager for Spice Kitchen Incubator. We just play a little game here. We've got some questions about wine.
Love it.
And Jimmy, this is sort of unfair because you'll know. You ask the questions.
Okay.
Because you know all this about wine.
So these were.
I may not know them.
As you know, being an operator, you know, you're doing pre-shift and, you know, that you see the glazed eyes with service staff and you're not sure if they're even listening, much less comprehending what you're saying. So this was my.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Yeah, right. It was called Dirty Joke Thursdays, and we would flip in some fun wine cards as flashcards, but also maybe some dirty jokes in there as well.
You didn't put any dirty jokes in there.
I didn't put any dirty jokes in. We just grab them randomly, but we do have two questions regarding wine for you both.
Okay.
All right. Question: which event launched international interest in California wines? So what launched international interest in California wines? A California Chardonnay was served at the White House. B, 2 California wines scored tops in an international wine tasting. C, Robert Mondavi and Baron Philippe de Rothschild created Opus 1. Or D, boxed wine was invented.
I'm going to say B.
It's B.
Yeah, you're right. It's the international. That was the Tasting of Paris in 1976.
I think I knew that for some reason.
Yeah.
There's a great movie with Alan Rickman about it, Bottle Shock.
Yeah, I saw that at Sundance, actually.
Fantastic.
The funniest
time. Alan Rickman. Poor Alan Rickman, no longer with us.
Yeah.
Poor celebrities.
Yeah. Sad poor celebrities.
Last question for wine. What are legs? A, the lines a wine leaves on your glass. B, the aging potential of a wine. C, another name for pits and stems. D, a winemaking additive.
That's a pretty easy question. Do you know what legs are when it comes to wine, Macy? No? It's the lines that leaves on the glass.
Yeah, we call them tiers.
Show.
So if you swirl your glass and you look at it, what we're measuring is how quickly the tiers form, how fast they fall, the arc between the tiers or the legs, and then the width. And that's an indicator of a number of things, but mostly alcohol.
Is that it?
Yeah, those are your flashcards.
Now, Emily, Spice Kitchen Incubator, the Spice Kitchen program, and the Spice on 9th. It says here recent grand opening. How recent is it?
From right now, we opened officially 2 weeks ago on the 25th of August.
How is it going?
It's going good. I mean, anytime you start a new restaurant, it's always harder to kind of get traction. We paused our Spice to Go back in January, so we haven't had anything in a few months, so it's kind of retraining everybody. But the response we've had so far has been great. Mornings are a great time to come in and get that coffee. Lunch gets a little busier, but there's food available pretty much all day long. There's coffee all
day
long.
And it's located where?
422 West, 900 South.
From 8 a.m. to 3 p.m.
8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday, and then we've got the space available for entrepreneurs. They can rent it if they want to do later night things, if they want to do weekend things. We've got Honey Tea Hive. She does kind of different experiential
tea services. I was going to ask about that one.
Yeah.
Honey Tea Hive. What is that again?
Mika, she ends up doing tea classes, so you can learn more about tea, so it's not as scary. She does tea parties, so you don't have to go to the Grand America anymore. You can have it delivered to you, or you can come meet her, and she'll teach you more about it. But she's looking at doing some of her classes in the space. Waterwheel Kitchen is planning on kind of having it open later during their week for dinner. We're planning on having kind of some pop-up markets on the weekend so people can come in, but there's a lot of opportunities.
And a lot of flexibility.
Yeah.
And it seems to me you probably are also always looking for more participants, more people who want to be a part of this.
That we actually don't have a problem.
Now, that's good.
Well, it is and it isn't. We've got different problems. So right now we've got a...
Let me tell you.
Please.
So we actually have a wait list for our program right now. Our services are so in demand that if I was to take every single person on that wait list, I would more than double, almost triple the size of my program.
Mm. Wow.
What is causing us issues is we've run out of space at the kitchen.
Yeah.
So that's what's always been the biggest issue. I mean, the county or it's county or city, I can't remember, they had like some initiatives, and that's kind of what helped get Square Kitchen, the kitchen that we rent from, get them up and running. But that was the only one. So it's really expensive to start a commissary kitchen, especially if you're doing something on the scale of what they're doing. There's a lot of infrastructure, a lot of equipment, a lot of remodeling. Normally it takes $2 million. So if you know anybody.
do you solicit donations and grants and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. So the majority of where our funding comes from is through grants or donations. We're vastly private donations versus public. That's where you're getting more federal, city, county funds.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a lot of our money from CRAs, which is Community Reinvestment Act. So those are banks that are trying to establish footholds in the community. We get a lot of it from private foundations. We get a lot of corporate donations that are really interested in our programs. And then it's just private donations from people like you. So that's where we get our funds from.
And how do people donate? Where do they go?
Well, if you go to our website, spicekitcheninincubator.org, there's more information on there, and there's a link that'll take you directly to our donations page.
Nice. Okay. I do it, and please patronize. I knew that this was going to be opening soon, and now it is open.
Yeah.
And I'm going to look at the website and be down to try some of these things because I love foreign, unusual cuisines.
Yeah.
And I haven't had Nepalese food since I was in Nepal, so so I can get it now.
Yeah.
All right. Cheers.
Alcohol? No alcohol.
Alcohol. Is not there. Not alcohol there. Is at the food festival, but not at that space.
Okay. All right. Cheers. Emily Park, thank you so much for being with us. I want to make sure I thank Macy for filling in for Dawson, our producer.
Thank you, Macy.
And remember, if you want to talk to us in any way, you can email us, theletsgoeatshow@gmail.com. You can say anything to us. I don't care. That's it. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you, and thank Cassatt, 15th and 15th Wine Bar.
Yes, indeed.
For hosting us this beautiful afternoon.
Cheers, and remember, everyone. If you're pouring drinks, always make mine a double.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. Comments, questions, or angry complaints to the management should be directed to the letsgoeatshow@gmail.com. The Let's Go Eat and Drink Show is produced by Dawson Dow, with help for this episode from Macy McCohen. The Let's Go Eat and Drink theme was composed and performed by Doug Wild. I'm Zach Caton. If you have any questions, please ask somebody else. Let's go.